This is 365 Honest Questions About the Bible. I'm your long-suffering host, Dante Stack. Today we're on question 85. Who or what is Leviathan? And this episode is a hybrid. If you were hoping to get away from the God of God series, tough noogies, guys. We're still in there. I'm committed to doing this thing. Today's episode serves as something of a mini God of Gods episode. It's not quite full-blown, but it's not completely exempt from the ideas and the theology and discussions that we've been having with the God of God series. We're still in that muck. On the other hand, as you'll note by the title of today's episode, or the question of today's episode, we now have quite a long-running series of episodes that start with the question, who or what is? So this episode can float between those different ideas. If you're just randomly picking up this episode and you haven't been listening to the God of God series, you should be fine. I'll perhaps be making a couple comments that maybe won't make a ton of sense to you, but that's fine. That's fine. If you're interested, you can go back and listen to... If you're interested, of course, you can go back and listen to parts 1 through 5 of our God of God subseries. But anywho, this question came up because I was working on God of Gods Part 6, which I wanted to focus on Satan and his role in the Divine Council and all the stuff we've been talking about in God of Gods. I wanted to get down to the bottom of Satan. That sounds weird. But in trying to do so, for one, it's a seemingly impossible task. Because, obviously, Satan has a lot of baggage. So you try to do research on a figure like Satan, and you get thrown every which way, and it's really hard to find views or discussions about Satan that are sound and not dealing with current events or some sort of religious cult or weird stuff. Obviously, you search Satan, you get weird stuff on your Google searches. So it's been an endeavor. Hopefully we will get to it. Also, I'm still confused. I haven't come to any sort of conclusion or even way to organize the information yet. That's really what I try to do, is not come away necessarily with conclusions, but just a way to format the information so that at least you can eat the information in a way that makes sense. Perhaps using the verb eat in that sentence doesn't make sense. But anyway, enough about that. In trying to rationalize or figure out Satan, several terms come up, specifically more in the demonic realm, that the Bible at least gives passing reference to, that I really want to discuss and are really fascinating, but at the same time, if I devote like a whole God of Gods episode to it, I'm just slowing down the pace of that narrative, and I think I throw us on a sinking ship of irrelevant information. So this week, we're looking at Leviathan. I think, if all goes well, next week we'll be looking at the concept of the Watchers, and then we'll get back to the God of God series in proper form. But I thought it was fun and helpful to look at these other words, ideas, passages that kind of relate to the Elohim, that kind of relate to the history of demonism, demonology, and Satan a little bit, but we're doing it in such a way that you know that this is kind of a sideshow to the big ideas of God of Gods. So without further ado, who or what is Leviathan? Alright, Leviathan is a big buzzword amongst a certain class of Christians because she's the gal that brings dinosaurs right into the forefront for creationists in particular, right? Job, which, once again, we say this so many times, Job, very good chance that Job is the oldest book of the Bible, and in it, right at the end, when God appears to Job and starts questioning Job, he kind of gives a list of animals and things about creation. And in context, God's essentially saying, like, Job, are you stronger than this thing? Do you know about this thing? Are you cool with bulls? Are you cool with Behemoth, this giant land monster? Are you bigger than that? Can you destroy that thing? Well, I'm bigger than that thing. I created that thing, yo. You can't fathom my bigness, Job. That's kind of God's thesis statement in this poem that he presents to Job. And the big thrust of his argument, kind of the cherry on top of God's poem of look at my creation, is this character Leviathan. Now, rather than just read off the verses that deal with Leviathan once again. I've already done that, and I did it with dramatic music in my fictional show, my fictional podcast, Solve the World. So let's just listen to an excerpt from the second episode of Solve the World, which is entitled The Leviathan, and get on with the show. So let's take a listen, and also check out Solve the World if you like what you hear. Can you draw Leviathan with a fishhook or press down his tongue with a cord? Can you put a rope in his nose or pierce his jaw with a hook? Will he make many pleas to you? Will he speak to you soft words? Will he make a covenant with you to take him for your servant forever? Will you play with him as with a bird? Will you put him on a leash for your girls? Will traders bargain over him? Will they divide him up among the merchants? Can you fill his skin with harpoons or his head with fishing spears? Lay your hands on him. Remember the battle. You will not do it again. Behold, the hope of man is false. He is laid low even at the sight of him. No one is so fierce that he dares to stir him up. Who then is he who can stand before me? Who has given to me that I should repay him? Whatever is under the heaven is mine. I will not keep silence concerning his limbs or his mighty strength or his goodly frame. Who can strip off his outer garment? Who would come near him with a bridle? Who can open the doors of his face? Around his teeth is terror. His back is made of rows of shields, shut up closely as with a seal. One is so near to another that no air can come between them. They are joined one to another. They clasp each other and cannot be separated. His sneezings flash forth light, and his eyes are like the eyelids of the dawn. Out of his mouth go forth flaming torches. Sparks of fire leap forth. Out of his nostrils comes forth smoke, as from a boiling pot and burning rushes. His breath kindles coals, and a flame comes forth from his mouth. In his neck abides strength, and terror dances before him. The folds of his flesh stick together, firmly cast on him, and immovable. His heart is hard as a stone, hard as the lower millstone. When he raises himself up, the mighty are afraid. At the crashing, they are beside themselves. Though the sword reaches him, it does not avail, nor the spear, nor the dart, or the javelin. He counts iron as straw and bronze as rotten wood. The arrow cannot make him flee for him. Sling stones are turned to stubble. Clubs are also counted as stubble. He laughs at the rattle of javelins. His underpants are like sharp potsherds. He spreads himself like a threshing sledge on the mire. He makes the deep boil like a pot. He makes the sea like a pot of ointment. Behind him he leaves a shining wake. One would think the deep to be white-haired. On earth there is not his like, a creature without fear. He sees everything that is high. He is king over all the sons of pride. All right, so you can understand, this ain't no normal shark or something. This is a sea monster, the likes of which the Loch Ness Monster would be scared of himself, right? This is a sea monster slash dragon creature, right? Because it breathes fire, and it's enormous, and it's in the waters, and it seems like it has plated skin. This thing is a beast. So you can see, if God's listing this animal as something that's real because he's listing his created beings, you can see why creationists and dinosaur lovers get really excited about this passage, because it seems to suggest that Job would at least know about Leviathan, and that Leviathan would be something that's still living and that everybody knows about. So the only thing that seems close to Leviathan would be like a megalodon or a giant squid maybe, or some sort of prehistoric dinosaur that lived in the sea. And if, like, have you seen the bones and the stuff the paleontologists show us from dinosaurs of the water? Like, they are insane. We think the ocean's scary now. Man, ocean dinosaurs are like the scariest of scaries. So just basing Leviathan off of this passage in Job, you're kind of left with thinking, okay, either God is talking about some sort of real creature, or he's talking about a creature of myth. And in either case, he's saying, I'm bigger than that. So maybe he's saying, there's no such thing as the Leviathan. You've heard stories of this bedtime creature. Well, I'm bigger than that. Well, that's all fun and good and exciting, and especially the 12-year-old within me gets super excited reading that. But for most of my life, I just left Leviathan as such. Oh, I could add at this point, too, there's some more Jewish mythology that goes along with Leviathan. On JewishEncyclopedia.com, I read about how in the Midrash, other Jewish rabbis talked about, in the beginning, on the fifth day of creation, God created two Leviathans and two Behemoths, Behemoths being essentially the land version of Leviathans. But God saw that the world couldn't handle two each of these creatures, so he slayed a Leviathan and he slayed a Behemoth, so there was only one of each of these. And the idea kind of sprang out of that, that these monsters are so big, there can't be multiples of them. So they're more or less eternal. Like, they don't die like the rest of us. They don't breed, obviously. So they're a special class of monster, I guess you would say. Later, much later in Jewish mythology, Jewish writings, I believe in medieval times, a third creature was added to this, the Ziz, which is a giant bird. And then along with that, especially in some Kabbalistic writings in 13th, 14th centuries, the idea kind of blew up that Leviathan was the guardian of the sea creatures, Behemoth the guardian of land animals, and Ziz the guardian of the creatures of the air. Again, that's all well and good. The problem occurred for me when I was doing research on Satan and his place in the Divine Council. I was reading this article on biblicalarchaeology.com, and the article is addressing primarily Satan in Revelation. Now, that article, dealing mostly with Satan, looked at Revelation chapter 12, verses 7 through 9, which I'll read now. It begins, "Now war arose in heaven, Michael and his angels fighting against the dragon, and the dragon and his angels fought back. But he was defeated, and there was no longer any place for them in heaven. And the great dragon was thrown down, that ancient serpent, who is called the devil and Satan, the deceiver of the whole world. He was thrown down to the earth, and his angels were thrown down with him." So this, to me, has always been a super exciting little passage, because it's the only place that directly says in Scripture that the serpent we see that deceives Adam and Eve is Satan, is the dude that's fighting at the end of times, right? So there's this beautiful connection. Satan of the past, deceiving Adam and Eve, is the same Satan that tries to tempt Jesus, is the same Satan that will be there at the very end. Nice. It's a nice holistic statement. It connects all of these tissues. So if there was any doubt that the serpent wasn't Satan in the Garden of Eden, now they're connected. Now that doubt is removed. That idea is pretty much repeated in Revelation 20, verses 1 and 2. "Then I saw an angel coming down from heaven, holding in his hand the key to the bottomless pit and a great chain. And he seized the dragon, that ancient serpent, who is the devil and Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years. That ancient serpent, right? That has to mean the serpent in the Garden of Eden, at least I supposed. But this article I read on biblical archaeology says, no, no. That ancient serpent, that dragon, connecting the words dragon and serpent in this context is not referring to the serpent that deceives Adam and Eve. It's referring to Leviathan. Oh, what? When I read that, I was really confused. The writer of this article is connecting Revelation chapter 12, verse 9, and Revelation 22 with Isaiah 27, which talks about the redemption of Israel. Verse 1, Isaiah 27, "In that day the Lord, Yahweh, with his hard and great and strong sword, will punish Leviathan, the fleeing serpent, Leviathan, the twisting serpent, and he will slay the dragon that is in the sea." Fleeing serpent, twisting serpent, dragon that is in the sea. So, wow. What if Revelation is talking about Leviathan, not the serpent of the Garden of Eden? Now, again, we gotta read all these things for genre, so we should hold this with not close-knit hands, right? Revelation could just be using Isaiah 27 as an analogy, as a metaphor, as an allusion. And it seems like Isaiah 27, that's not saying that at the end of days, God's going to find the biggest sea monster in the sea and literally kill it, right? Like, that doesn't seem like a real thing. That seems like we're talking war metaphors here. Someone, maybe Rome, some presence is so powerful that Isaiah is saying, this enemy of the Lord is like Leviathan, has the attributes of a giant serpent dragon monster. But anyway, in an effort to get at the bottom of this, then, it seems necessary that we should read every passage in the Bible that specifically says the word Leviathan. Well, that search doesn't take us very far, because outside of the book of Job, there are but two references to Leviathan. The first of those three we've already read, Isaiah 27. The other two come from two different psalms. One reads pretty straightforward. It's in Psalm 104. I'll read it in context, just a couple sentences. Verses 25 through 27. Here is the sea, great and wide, which teems with creatures innumerable, living things both small and great. There go the ships and Leviathan, which you formed to play in it. These all look to you to give them their food in due season. It's just the psalm of praise saying God is Lord over all creation. And here we see Leviathan being one of the members of creation that is in the sea to play with. Oh, I forgot to say, in all Jewish literature, Leviathan is always written as just breathtakingly huge. Here's a quote from Rabbi Johanan in old Midrashic literature. He says, "Once we went in a ship and saw a fish which put its head out of the water. He had horns upon which was written, 'I am one of the meanest creatures that inhabit the sea. I am 300 miles in length, and enter this day into the jaws of the Leviathan.'" And quoting here from JewishEncyclopedia.com, "When the Leviathan is hungry," reports Rabbi Dimi, "he sends forth from his mouth a heat so great as to make all the waters of the deep boil, and if he put his head into paradise, no living creature could endure the odor of him. His abode is the Mediterranean Sea, and the waters of the Jordan fall into his mouth." I just thought that was a really cool description. Anyway, moving on, so there's only one other reference to Leviathan in the Bible, and it once again, is pretty much just in passing reference, but it's a doozy. Here's Psalm 74, verses 12 through 14. "Yet God, my King, is from of old, working salvation in the midst of the earth. You divided the sea by your might. You broke the heads of the sea monsters on the waters. You crushed the heads of Leviathan. You gave him as food for the creatures of the wilderness. You split open springs and brooks." All right, did you catch that? You crushed the heads of Leviathan. Leviathan singular, heads plural. So the psalmist is saying, God, you're so big, you're so bad, you crush the heads of Leviathan. Meaning, of course, Leviathan is like a hydra. Leviathan has many heads. Here again, there's a chance for an allusion to Leviathan in Revelation. Revelation 13:1. "And I saw a beast rising out of the sea, with 10 horns and 7 heads. This beast that comes out of the sea with 7 heads is then worshipped by the peoples of the earth, who, in verse 4 of chapter 13, the people say, "Who is like the beast, and who can fight against it?" Verse 6. "The beast opened its mouth to utter blasphemies against God, blaspheming his name and his dwelling," that is, those who dwell in heaven. Back up for a second. Let's throw aside this Revelation talk, because we all know Revelation is weird, and it's hard to make inferences from it. But dealing with Psalm 74, in context of the other references to Leviathan, none of the other references of Leviathan in the Bible talk about God facing Leviathan, or God having anger towards Leviathan, or needing to destroy Leviathan. Yet, in Psalm 74, God crushes the heads of Leviathan. Why? Why would that be so? It does seem to give a little bit of credibility to this idea that Revelation 12:9, that talks about that fleeing serpent, that twisting serpent, that dragon of the water, being Leviathan and not necessarily the serpent in the Garden of Eden. Now, pop quiz, do you know of any dragon monster that has 7 heads? Bring! Answer, Hydra, the Greek god. Hydra, the Greek god monster that has 7 heads, whose odor is so bad that none of the other gods can stand to be around it. The god who is slain by whom? Hercules. Here's where things get weird. Israel, obviously, was a Mesopotamian nation, and they were surrounded by other Mesopotamian peoples and religions, and as we've seen in the God of God series, Israel borrows a lot of words and has a lot of similar linguistic similarities between these other Mesopotamian countries, and even they seem to use the same names for God. I'm looking at you, El. So if we want to discover more about Leviathan, we're apt to look at these other Mesopotamian cultures, and bring, Leviathan plays a major role in the Canaanite pantheon. So the Canaanites called Leviathan Lotan. In Hebrew, Leviathan probably is more pronounced like Levitan or Levitian. So in a lot of the average everyday Canaanite readings, Leviathan sounds very similar to what we see in Job. But we see in the Canaanite pantheon, the god above all the others, on his own plane essentially, is the god El. Now, right below him, or perhaps in time coming up to be his equal in Canaanite mythology, is the god Baal, or Baal. Now, as we've noted, Baal is the god that rides on the clouds. There are some connecting seams between Baal and Jesus. I'm not saying Jesus is a photocopy or a Jewish version of the Canaanite Baal. I'm just saying there are similarities there, particularly with Jesus calling himself the Son of Man who descends on the clouds and Baal being the cloud rider. But anyway, if we then look at Baal, we can see a lot of connecting tissue between Baal and Hercules. Once again, not saying Baal is Hercules or Hercules is the Greek version of Baal, just that there's some connecting tissue, there's a lot of weird similarities between the two. We have what are called the Baal cycle, Ugaritic stones. So these are old ancient stones that we found that in ancient Ugaritic, which the Canaanites would be super familiar with, tells various stories about Baal. One of these stories has Baal going against the sea god, which in Ugaritic is called Yam. Now, Yam, without a doubt, is the same as the Canaanite Lotan. Leviathan to the Canaanites and Yam are equals. They are the same thing. Yam's full name, I believe, is Yam Nahar. Yam means sea, Nahar means river, and Yam is the god of the seas and the rivers. Now, according to the Baal cycle, this Ugaritic manuscript, El, the highest god, decided to give his creation over to one of the other gods. And initially, Yam, god of the sea, rose up and took it, and he was going to be the highest now. He had the most authority. But Baal, essentially the prince of the air, the god of the air, the one who rides the clouds, decided to fight Yam for this right to be the highest of the high. And when they fought, the Baal cycle describes how the whole earth became flooded. This is the Canaanite universal flood story. It's the battle between Baal and Leviathan. Why did the whole earth flood? Because in fighting, Yam, to get his power, opened up the fissures of the seas and the lakes. So he opened up waters from underneath. And Baal, in fighting, thundered and brought rain from the heavens. So thus, in this way, the whole earth was flooded. Now, if you'll remember, there's some weird similarities here, too, with our Genesis account of the flood. Because the account of the flood doesn't just say that it rained for 40 days and 40 nights, but also that waters from the deep came up. So we have this idea of water from above and below. So in Canaanite mythology, the flood also comes from below due to Yam and from above due to Baal. Eventually, after fighting for a long period of time, it would be interesting. I didn't see this, but it would be interesting to see if anywhere in the Ugaritic manuscripts, if it says they fought for 40 days, Baal finds another god who makes clubs for him, and he's able to slay Leviathan. He's able to slay Yam by clubbing him to death, by crushing him with a club. And then Baal has this feast of Yam, and he invites a bunch of other gods to feast on Yam's dead corpse. Now, if that's not enough, in the Ugaritic Baal cycle, there's also this idea that Yam will one day rise again to fight another battle with Baal, and that will be the apocalyptic endgame battle. So now, what do we do with all this information? I have no doubt that the readers of Job and the readers of Isaiah and the readers of the Psalms are well aware of these Canaanite mythologies. They have to know the name Leviathan, Lotan, Leviathan, Yam. They have to know that, right? They're not just segregated peoples. They're connecting with the other cultures around them. Solomon, you know, brings in wives from the four corners of the earth, and we're told that Solomon's mind essentially is perversed from all these other religions. And Israel's constantly being punished by God and yelled at from God because they're worshiping other gods from religions and other people groups that are right around. They're next door neighbors. So I have to believe that they know about Leviathan, and they know the baggage that that name bears with it. Oh, did I forget to mention? I think I did. Also, Yam has seven heads. So, there you go. Here's what you're left with. Either Leviathan is a real monster and everyone encountered this monster and then made up myths about the monster, or Leviathan is this mythology that everyone knows on and God's just borrowing from that, or C, maybe there is something to Leviathan, and maybe Leviathan, Yam, is another one of the Elohim. In the Ugaritic cycle, Yam is able to come back because he forges a bond with the god of death. So in the end, it is not just Yom, Leviathan, that rises to fight. It's Yom with Hades, or it's Yom with the god of death. Death and the dragon of the sea rise up together. If nothing else, this adds layers to my reading of Revelation, no? I want to end by going back and reading Psalm 74, which is the psalm that talked about God crushing the heads of Leviathan. I want to read the entire psalm. It begins, O God, why do you cast us off forever? Why does your anger smoke against the sheep of your pasture? Remember your congregation, which you have purchased of old, which you have redeemed to be the tribe of your heritage. Read that, or listen to that, and think of that in context of this idea that God gave the nations to the Elohim. How sad it would be that the nation that he's purchased, that he's decided to claim as his own, to make his glory shine forth, is constantly in such a wretched state. It makes the fall of Israel so much sadder. Remember Mount Zion, where you have dwelt. Direct your steps to the perpetual ruins. The enemy has destroyed everything in the sanctuary. Your foes have roared in the midst of your meeting place. They set up their own signs for signs. They were like those who swing axes in a forest of trees, and all its carved wood they broke down with hatches and hammers. They set your sanctuary on fire. They profaned the dwelling place of your name, bringing it down to the ground. They said to themselves, "We will utterly subdue them." They burned all the meeting places of God in the land. We do not see our signs. There is no longer any prophet, and there is none among us who knows how long. How long, O God, is the foe to scoff? Is the enemy to revile your name forever? Why do you hold back your hand, your right hand? Take it from the fold of your garment and destroy them. Yet God, my King, is from of old, working salvation in the midst of the earth. You divided the sea by your might. You broke the heads of the sea monsters on the waters. You crushed the heads of Leviathan. You gave him as food for the creatures of the wilderness. You split open springs and brooks. You dried up ever-flowing streams. Yours is the day, yours also the night. You have established the heavenly lights and the sun. You have fixed all the boundaries of the earth. You have made summer and winter. Remember this, O Lord, how the enemy scoffs, and a foolish people reviles your name. Do not deliver the soul of your dove to the wild beasts. Do not forget the life of your poor forever. Have regard for the covenant, for the dark places of the land are full of the habitations of violence. Let not the downtrodden turn back in shame. Let the poor and needy praise your name. Arise, O God, defend your cause. Remember how the foolish scoff at you all the day. Do not forget the clamor of your foes, the uproar of those who rise against you, which goes up continually. This is Dante Stack signing out. Peace be the journey.